Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Can archaeology confirm what the Bible says about Israel's most sacred site? In this episode, Dr. Joseph Holden and Dr. Pat Zukran investigate the Temple Mount, tracing its biblical roots, archaeology discoveries, and enduring significance. Their discussion shows why this historic location remains central to both faith and the evidence for Scripture's reliability. Brian Nixon of Paradis, a Ministry of Veritas International University, joins Pat and Dr. Joseph Holden for an informative discussion. Now on to part one of this two-part broadcast entitled The Temple Mount.
Joining me on the broadcast is Dr. Joseph Holden, author, pastor, and co-founder of Veritas International University, and Dr. Patrick Zukran, author, pastor, and founder of Evidence and Answers, and a doctoral student in VIU School of Archaeology. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Great to hear your voice again.
Good to be back with you, Brian and Pat.
As both of you know, archaeology is one of Veritas International University's strengths. As a matter of fact, we just wrapped up our international symposium on archaeology here in Albuquerque, and it was stellar. And through our continual research, classes, and excavations, we find that Veritas is one of the leading biblical archaeology universities in the world. That said, we'll be using Dr. Holden and Dr. Geisler's book, The Popular Handbook of Archaeology and the Bible, as our foundation for this new series. As we progress through the top biblical archaeological discoveries, we'll use four D's to guide our discussion. First, the discovery. What and where the item was found. Second, the description of the item, its physical characteristics and what it reveals. Third, its dwelling, the context and historical setting it is found in the Bible. And finally, its denotation, its significance, what it tells us about the Bible's reliability. Last time, Pat and I introduced biblical archaeology. If you missed the broadcast, we encourage you to check it out. Today, we'll start our discussion of the top 10 biblical archaeological discoveries. And we're going to start off big here. We're going to begin with the Temple Mount. So, Joe, let's unpack the first D, its discovery. Give us some background and history on the Temple Mount and maybe just move into how it was discovered throughout the years.
Well, Brian, you know, when we talk about the Temple Mount and the Temple Mount platform that we can go visit even today in Jerusalem, any discussion would be incomplete if we didn't at least acknowledge the mobile tabernacle that Moses used in the wilderness. During those 40 years he spent in the wilderness, God commanded him to build a mobile itinerant tabernacle. It was much like a tent. It didn't look much from the outside, but on the inside, it was the place where God met men and met the priest and was in the center of that Jewish camp when they camped throughout those 40 years. And so after the conquest occurred under Joshua and after Israel moved into Canaan after their exodus from Egypt, you had the tabernacle moving from place to place even within Canaan, but then finally came to settle for a few hundred years in Shiloh. In fact, Shiloh's the place right now where Dr. Scott Striplinger is excavating and doing much field work and so forth. It's just an amazing dig there that many of our students get to participate in to do their field work. So I encourage you, if you want to go dig, Shiloh's a great place to start with Dr. Stripling. But as the tabernacle began to settle in, and in time, that tabernacle became the permanent Jewish temple. It was a fixed structure. And it was the center of religious life for the Jews. It was located right there in the center of Jerusalem, right next to the Kidron Valley in eyeshot of the Mount of Olives. It was just amazing. And the religious value of this temple cannot be understated. In fact, it has so much value. There's three basic Abraham religions that hold it in high esteem. And Judaism, Christianity, Islam, all look at this site in Jerusalem, the Temple Mount in particular, as extremely religiously valued. For Judaism, it's the holiest place within their religion. It's the place where Abraham offered up Isaac in Genesis 22, and where two Jewish temples stood, being built during the time of Solomon, and a second temple being built during the time of Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest, and then remodeled and beautified under Herod as we get closer to the time of Christ. But for Christians, it's also a holy place because, again, it's where Abraham offered his son Isaac. It was the place where Christ taught in the temple precincts and in the porches and Solomon's porticos there. It's the place where Jesus ministered to the people. And it was an amazing place because it's also the crest or the mountain range in which Christ was crucified outside the city gates in that first century. And again, for Muslims, it's valuable because it's the third holiest site in Islam after Mecca and Medina. It's the place where many Muslims believe Muhammad and his winged horse, El Barak, made his night journey in Surah 17 from Mecca. Jerusalem is where Islamic tradition says Muhammad ascended to heaven and spoke with Allah concerning prayer. So it has great, tremendous value amongst those Abrahamic religions. But in terms of its discovery, Brian, you know, it gradually occurred over time. And it began in the 1800s with many of the British explorers and surveyors and excavators began to uncover parts of what we know today as the Temple Mount platform and the retaining walls. But it wasn't until probably the late 60s, 1967, 68, 69, when the Jewish people had access to the area around the Temple Mount after the war, they began excavating. Amin Mazar and Benjamin Mazar and all these different excavators, archaeologists were going in there and they were uncovered all kinds of retaining walls and steps and so forth. So the discovery really didn't begin in earnest to the 1960s. And then the rest is history. It's been just a constant uncovering of more and more features until what we see today is what the final product really was. So it's just an amazing discovery.
Yeah, it really is. That was a great introduction, really talking about the massive role that the Temple Mount plays, not only to biblical history, but cultural history. It really is. And so much of the world still focuses in on that little geographical area. So really appreciate that. Well, Pat, let's move to the second D, its description. Many of our listeners may not really be familiar of what is found. What is the Temple Mount, its physical aspects and characteristics? So can you kind of paint a picture for us?
Yeah, Brian, you know, what we see today is mainly the remains of the temple walls and the platform built by Herod the Great in the first century. As Joe stated, you know, Solomon originally built the temple somewhere around 960 BC, and then it was destroyed by the Babylonians in 586, and then rebuilt by Zerubbabel there in the book of Ezra about 516 BC. And of course, if you read the story of Ezra, it wasn't as great as Solomon's temple. The people wept because they remembered the glory of Solomon's temple. And when they saw the second temple, it wasn't as great. Well, Herod, a lot of people don't know, he was an incredible engineer and architect of his time. And to win the favor of the Jews, he did a massive, people may not realize just how massive his rebuilding of the temple was, as you know, Joe referred to there. And he expanded the Temple Mount and raised the southern part of the Temple Mount. And so it became a lot bigger than it was. And so, you know, that got the Jews a little bit on Herod's side there. But so what we see is the remains of Herod's temple there. And it's approximately 35 acres. So it's one of, if not the largest religious platform in antiquity. And so the Temple Mount, when you go there and see it, it's an artificial rectangular platform. And it's supported by foundations of enormous, huge stone retaining walls. And if you look at the walls, you can go walk around it. I mean, some of the stones there weigh over 500 tons. So people are fascinated with the stones of the pyramids. Well, you know, the Temple Mount has these huge stones as well, foundation stones, some over 500 tons. And On top, of course, of the mount itself is that level platform, and the surface has paved courtyards there. And presently today, to the south, on the south side of that Temple Mount is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Joe referred to the Temple Mount is, a sacred site in Islam, although they have really no archaeological evidence that Muhammad, landed there on his midnight journey. But anyway, the Al-Aqsa Mosque is there. And then, of course, the famous Dome of the Rock, the Islamic shrine built there in the 7th century by Abdul Malik. And under the Dome of the Rock is exposed bedrock, and many believe that the Dome of the Rock stands where the Holy of Holies once stood there at the Jerusalem Temple. And before the temple, Genesis chapter 22, many believe that was Mount Moriah, where Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice before God, stopped him. And so this is the highest point of the mount there. And moving east from the eastern side, if you would walk through the Holy of Holies, you would have come to the inner court, where only the Jews were allowed in this court. And then to the south is a large open area now. That would have been the court of the Gentiles. And there would have stood a 3 to 5 foot wall that divided the inner court from the outer court of the Gentiles. And I think Joe or I may touch on this, but a famous warning marker was discovered there, separating the court of the Gentiles from the inner court there. And you'll see the remains of 4 gates, the entrance to the temple on the south side. You've got the famous southern steps. So all over, on the northeast corner, you might see the remains of what was the Antonia Fortress. That offended the Jews. That's Roman fortress there that Herod put where you could house a few hundred Roman soldiers in case any trouble happened. They could have come right there to the Temple Mount. And you might see some of the remains there. So when you go to the Temple Mount, those are some of the things you're going to see.
That's amazing. And it really is just to sit and ponder that it's 35 acres and it was the largest platform in antiquity truly is mind-boggling. I know I'm kind of going out of order here. We usually like to tell people recommended books at the end, but for those of you who want a visual, a picture of what the Temple Mount may have looked like, I would encourage you to pick up Lean Ritmeyer's series of books. He has books on the Temple Mount, Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, Understanding the Holy Temple, Understanding the Temple Mount and such. And he's reconstructed them. Not only is he an archaeologist, but he's an architect. So his drawings are just spectacular. So that would be one resource to give you a visual of what it may have looked like in Jesus's day. So that was a great answer. Well, Joe, let's go to the third D, and that's the dwelling, where it's found in the Bible. And you kind of alluded to some of this. You touched on some of the biblical history, but maybe just expand this some more. How is it related to Ezra and, Solomon's temple and such of that nature?
Sure, Brian. When we talk about the temple and the Temple Mount, it all starts back in Genesis chapter 22, when God commanded Abraham to offer his son Isaac as a sacrifice on a mountain that God would identify in the land of Moriah. That Mount Moriah in the land of Moriah would be the eventual place where the temple would be built. And of course, God intervened and Abraham didn't have to sacrifice his son. But it starts there in Genesis 22. God was foreshadowing what Christ would do centuries and centuries later for humanity, and that was to die for our sins and then raise from the dead. And then in 2 Samuel 24, this location again became very prominent because in the 11th and early 10th century BC, we're told that God was very angry at David because he took a census. God said, "Don't count the people." But what did David do? He counted the people, and God sent a pestilence. It killed over 70,000 Israelites in just 3 days. So David was desperate to avoid any more carnage from this pestilence in Jerusalem. He wanted to protect the city from God's wrath. And God gave him instruction in order to avert this devastating chastisement on David and the people there. And God told David to buy the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. And that was located on what is now the Temple Mount area. And he told David to purchase that threshing floor where the wheat was threshed out and separated from its husks. He said, build an altar there, and an altar of sacrifice. And so David took 50 pieces of silver, and he bought that threshing floor land, the Temple Mount area, what we know today, and the oxen that Araunah had in his possession. And then soon after, in 1 Chronicles 22, David would begin collecting materials for his son Solomon. Remember, David couldn't build that temple. He had too much blood on his hands. It would be left for his son Solomon to build that first temple. So David began making arrangements to have the materials ready for Solomon. And he reached out, of course, to the king of Tyre. His name was Hiram, to get those materials. In 1 Kings 6:1, it tells us that Solomon began to construct that first temple in the fourth year of his reign, 480 years after Israel left Egypt. So if Solomon, let's say, started in 970 BC to reign as king, in the fourth year of his reign, the first temple would have started construction in about 966 BC. That temple was complete. God filled it with his glory. And then in 586 BC, Pat mentioned this earlier, that the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar ultimately destroyed Jerusalem, just razed to the ground the temple structure, completely destroying it. And that was in 586 BC. But after that, you have Zerubbabel and Jeshua the high priest starting to build the second temple. This is after the Babylonian captivity had ended. God gave them permission to go back, and the kings of Persia gave them permissions to go back and ultimately build this second temple. Well, they started to build it. Then they let it lie there for many years. And then God sent Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the prophet to wake them up, to get back to work, to finish that second temple. And that second temple would ultimately be finished around 515, 516 BC, and that would serve the Jewish people. Though it wasn't as glorious as the Solomonic first temple, it was this structure that at least it was built, and God could work through that. And that would be the temple to which ultimately the Messiah would come. But then closer to the time of Christ, about 20 BC, you had Herod taking that Zerubbabel's temple, the second temple, and beautifying it, expanding the platform, expanding and beautifying. It was the largest man-made structure in the world at the time of Christ, and it was quite profound. He started to remodel it in 20 BC, because we know through the Gospel of John, it said 40 and 6 years we've been building this temple, and you can raise it in 3 days. So that means it was about 26 AD when they said that to Jesus while he was in the temple. 46 years, ultimately, of building. He would eventually finish it in the 60s AD, and then immediately after it was finished, the Roman legions destroyed that beautiful temple all the way to the ground, sacked Jerusalem because of the war they were fighting with the Jews. But the story doesn't end there. The Jewish people were scattered throughout the world, and then finally we see the prophet Ezekiel in chapters 40 to 48 of his book. He describes a large millennial temple that will again be rebuilt. So the tribulation temple will be replaced with this millennial temple, which is extremely big, huge, large, and that will be the temple that will take us through that 1,000-year millennial period. So from the beginning of Genesis 22 to Ezekiel's prophecy of the millennial temple in Ezekiel 40 through 48, the temple had a great and illustrious history. Israel didn't always steward that temple correctly and morally, but God said he's going to bring one back that he will build ultimately for that millennial kingdom.
That's a great overview, Joe, and so much deep biblical and cultural history there. And, you know, you just sit back and you ponder, and I know I said this again, but it's just worth reflecting on, that this small little piece of geography really is the focus, the epicenter of the world's attention. And we know why, because it ushered in, you know, the Messiah. So thanks for that.
And Brian.
Oh, yes.
If our listeners would like to go into the scriptures and read much about this, they can go to the books of the Chronicles. They can also pick up the book of Ezra. That talks about a return back into the land from captivity from Persia and Babylon. And he'll take many of the Jewish families to go back there. And their job was to get that temple, second temple, ultimately built. Now, later, our listeners can also read the book of Nehemiah, which after the temple was built, Nehemiah was sent there to build the walls and ultimately reconstruct the city. The temple had already been built. Now the infrastructure around the temple was going to be built as well. And that started to occur around 444 BC, about 70 years after the second temple was built under Zerubbabel. So those are some biblical books people can really get into and find out more.
Yes, Ezra and Nehemiah, so good. And thanks for that, Joe. Those were kind of like little freebies. You gave us this wonderful overview, and then you tossed in some extras. I love it. Well, Pat, let's go to the fourth D, our denotation. What is the significance of the Temple Mount? You know, I've kind of alluded to it that, boy, the world has been watching this little piece of geography for thousands of years. What exactly is going on? Why is this so important?
Yes, Brian, you know, the temple was the most important structure in the history of the Jewish people. And still, the site remains the most important site for the nation of Israel, because when David moved the capital to Jerusalem, Jerusalem became the political capital. But when he moved the Ark of the Covenant there, it became also the religious center for the people of Israel. Of course, you know the story in 2 Samuel 7, David wanted to build a temple for the Lord, but the Lord would not allow him to because he was a man of war. But he said, your son will build it. And Solomon built that temple there on the Temple Mount, and it was the most important structure for the nation of Israel. And that's where the presence of the Lord was. That's where, you know, the priest served. That's where the sacrifices were made. That became the center of the teaching and learning of the law. That's where the apostles first began preaching and gathering. We see in the early chapters 2 and 3 of the book of Acts. And so much of the preaching of the apostles occurred there. Many think on the southern steps there in the book of Acts. When I was in Israel, one of the fascinating things that stunned me is that there were some people, many Muslims especially, who believed that the temple did not exist. You know, we're standing on the Temple Mount, and they're saying, where's the temple? I don't see anything. And it just kind of stunned me. You know, it's just kind of like, well, look around you. Many deny that there was a temple. There are some critics, not that many, who deny the existence of the temple. But the evidence is just too overwhelming that indeed we have the remains there of the foundation and the retaining walls and the platform of the temple. And if the temple did not exist, of course, that would be a huge blow to the historical reliability of the Bible, because it is a main feature throughout the Old and New Testament in the book of Acts, you know. But the discovery of the Temple Mount affirms the historical reliability of the Bible. And as Joe mentioned, the prophets and the apostles predict that there will be a third temple there in the future. Ezekiel, you know, gives the most detailed description of the third temple, the future temple that will be there. And when you go to Israel today, to the famous Western Wall, where you might see on TV or the Discovery Channel, many of the Jews there praying as they place their hands upon the Western Wall and pray. If you look to the left, if you're looking at the Western Wall, look to the left, there's a temple museum there where they have designs for the rebuilding of a third temple. So it has tremendous significance to the nation of Israel, but also to the, you know, historical reliability of the Bible.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586, or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.